hard blue stare penetrating mine. As Master guided us around the pits, it took all that I could muster not to look back to the champion's training area, to the large beast that dominated its domain. The male with the cruel eyes, the infallible killer, the pit bull of the Arzioni Empire. Master's living god among men.
3. Luca. Brooklyn, New York. "So are we talking about thousands or hundreds?" I asked Valentine. He, Zal, and I were stationed around the table in my house. Valentine's eyes narrowed in thought. I watched the newest member of our Bratva as he straightened in his seat. Cracking his wide neck from side to side, he replied, "Hundreds, one or two, depending if there is a match. Master Arziani brings in more of his males if his associates come in. They fly to the pit from all over the world, many traveling days to get there." Valentine's fists clenched on the tabletop, large muscles bunching under his black shirt. The veins in his forearms corded with the anger ripping through him. I glanced to Zal, who studied his new brother-in-law. Zal briefly met my eyes before leaning forward and saying to Valentine, "Be calm. Breathe through it." Valentine's nostrils flared. I can see that Zal's words were having no effect on him whatsoever. Instead, Valentine rose from the table and began to pace back and forth in front of the fireplace. He was panting with rage. Given his sheer size and scarred face, and the permanent raised red scar collaring his neck, Valentine appeared every inch the monster he was renowned to be.
"Why are we wasting time with all this shit?"
he snarled, pointing at the maps we'd had constructed of the blood pit based on his memory. I never took my eyes off him. The map lay in the center of the table, our notes scattered around the edges of the wooden top. Our intel regarding Arziani's pit was gradually building day by day.
"We sit here like fucking fearful morons as that prick sits on his throne doing fuck knows what to my sister."
He roared, then stopped dead in his tracks. His fists shook so much that his entire body seemed to convulse. As calmly as possible, I leaned back in my chair at the head of the table and said, "Arziani is the biggest threat we've ever faced." I pointed to Zal, then to myself, and finally to Valentine. "I'm not just talking about within the Bratva or the Georgian Brotherhood. I'm talking about us three too, in the Gulag, under Jaqua, and with that bitch Mistress Arziani. The blood pit is like nothing we've ever experienced." Valentine's hot glare locked on me. He slapped his fist on his broad chest. "I know this more than any of you. I was raised in that hell. I spent day after day in those pits until I was chosen as an Ubitsa. Do not lecture me on what I had to endure." I chased back the annoyance of his disrespect. "Then I don't need to explain why detailed planning is essential. Why we need to know exactly what we'll be facing. Above all, we need to find a way in. The blood pit is underground, heavily fortified, and manned by many, many guards. It's impossible unless we can identify a secure way in, unseen." Valentine remained motionless while I talked. Leaning forward, I rested my elbows on the table and asserted, "We are heavily outnumbered. Besides us three, the males under our command are soldiers of the street. They fight with guns. They have no idea how to overcome an organization such as this, how to fight male prisoners like us. Even if we made it into the pit, the guards are too many. Even if we overcame the guards, the conditioned male fighters would surely tear them apart, and we would all die. Each of us is unbeatable in a death match, but even we cannot defeat hundreds of enslaved fighters and Ubitsi. For a second, I thought that I had gotten through to Valentin, but suddenly a pained roar burst from his throat, and he struck out at the mirror hanging on the wall. The sound of shattering glass echoed around the room, but Valentin didn't stop there. Lost in his rage, he swept his arm along the mantelpiece, destroying Kiza's ornaments. Zal looked to me in concern, but I slowly shook my head. Valentin was fresh from his long imprisonment. Worse, his sister was under the control of that sadistic bastard Arziani. The deep fear of this was steadily eroding any peace he could find, day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute. When Valentin's gaze snapped to us, I could see that he had been overwhelmed by the monster that lived within. I nodded my head. Zal shifted on his seat, ready to fight, but there was only one person that could quell his rage. She brought with her the same calm each of us had found latterly in this dark hell of a life. She brought water to the fire, the balm to our conditioned rage.
Zoya!
Zal bellowed, never taking his eyes off Valentin, who was bracing to fight. Light footsteps padded on the wooded floorboards of the hallway. In seconds, there was a light knock on the door.
Enter,
I called. The doorknob turned. Zoya Kostova entered, long black hair hanging to her back. She was dressed in black jeans and a sweater. Without any need for explanation, Zoya's dark gaze zeroed in on an increasingly agitated Valentin. Zal pushed back his chair, readying to protect his sister. But she gestured for him to stop. As she looked to her brother, she shook her head. Zal stilled, though he remained primed to strike if needed, as was I. Zoya stepped forward. As she did so, Valentin's lost eyes slammed to greet her. She walked forward, no fear in her stride. Valentin's muscled shoulders relaxed in response. His scarred face melted to one of deep sorrow. Valentin? Zoya murmured softly as she approached her male. Valentin reached out and drew her in to press against his chest. I watched as his eyes squeezed shut and he breathed in her scent. Zoya's hands lifted to run over his head.
You're okay,
she murmured in Russian, speaking Valentin's native language to help calm the savage beast within. I could see the tension leave Valentin the second Zoya was in his arms. I glanced to Zal, who was watching the scarred Russian like a hawk. Zal had slowly but steadily grown to accept Valentin over these past few weeks. Worryingly, Valentin's mood was unstable, a whole lot more unstable than either Zal or I had been when freed from captivity. We knew that most of this stemmed from a desperate need to save his sister, Inessa. The rest was due to his many years as a slave killer for the Arzianis. Valentin wasn't adjusting to the outside world as well as we had hoped. His conditioning to kill, only to kill, ran far too deep to undo quickly. But it was his anger that troubled us most. We all had anger. We all had to tamp down its burning heat. To be normal in this world was a challenge every unforgiving second, round the clock. But for Valentine, it was much worse. Only Zoya could tame his anger.
You're okay,
Zoya murmured gently. Rearing back, Valentine looked down at his female and sighed deeply. His hand cupped her face, and he slowly nodded, an unspoken message of love traveling between them. They stayed that way for several seconds, communicating silently. Then Zoya turned her head to me and asked,
Can we go home?
I could see the desperation in her torn expression. She needed to be alone with Valentine. She needed privacy to truly calm him. I nodded. Zoya took Valentine's hand in her own. Without another word, Zoya guided him from my office and out of the house. As the front door closed, Zal slumped back in his seat and pushed his long hair from his face. I sat back too, glaring at the blueprints of the blood pit, trying to figure out how the hell we could break in safely.
We need to get into that fucking pit, Zal said eventually.
Sighing, I ran my hands down my face and nodded.
I know.
But with their numbers and their home field advantage, I can't visualize how to take these fuckers down. Zog glanced out the window to the street beyond and admitted,
Valentine isn't coping. He needs his sister back to fully heal and move on.
He turned back to me, his face darkened.
I've only just gotten Zoya back. I will not see her destroyed. Because she alone can calm him down. It's affecting her. I can see it in her face every time she enters the room and sees his rage.
He was right. We could all see it.
I am the Lidieri of the Georgians. You are the Nyat of the Bratva. We run this city. I know this. The New York underworld is ours and ours alone.
But if we don't find Inessa soon, before long, Valentine will snap, and he will kill. Zal shook his head.
Even we cannot prevent him from killing in public 24/7.
Zal's hands flattened on the tabletop, and he added,
Then people would realize he wasn't like them, that he was different, changed. Too many questions would fall back on us.
The real world isn't ready to handle our reality. How could they accept that the gulags, the drugs, and the blood pit are real? It is the stuff of nightmares. How could they believe that males are being raised as killers for sport and greed?
Worse, it would surely implicate the Bratva and my people in too many ways. We can fight the police and the system here in our city, but we can't take on the whole world.
Zal shrugged and tapped the map of the blood pit.
We need a way in. We need a solid plan and we need it fast. I won't have our freedom jeopardized. I won't have what I've found with my Talia taken away from me after being without her all of these years.
He raised his brow.
And we know you won't give up Kiza. We need to act, Luca, and we need to do it soon.
Lifting the glass of water sitting beside me, I brought it to my lips and drained it in one motion. Zal stood up. As he passed by, he pressed his hand on my shoulder. I didn't move until I heard him leaving my house with Talia, who had been sitting with Kiza. Pushing back from the table, I got to my feet and walked down the hallway. In the living room, Kiza was waiting for me on the couch, hand lying on her swollen stomach. She took one look at me, her face sympathetic. Silently, she held out her hand I took it in an instant and dropped to the couch beside her. Kiza fell against my chest, and her hand landed on my stomach. She didn't say anything. Once I'd fought through my pride, I admitted, I can't see a way to defeat Arziani. The minute I had confessed what was torturing my mind, a heavy weight lifted from my chest. Kiza froze, then tilted up her chin to meet my eyes. I stared down at my beautiful wife and sighed. They run a damn fortress, Solnishko. Arziani seems insane from what Valentine has said. He's deluded, thinks he's some kind of king, some Roman Caesar. The king of his prisoners. Males, just like me. He drugs them and forces them to fight on until they die. Kids, plucked from families and orphanages, made into his monsters. I ran my hand over my tired eyes and asked, how the hell do we stop him? How do we even breach his blood pit? Kiza sat up and brought her face to hover over mine.
You'll find a way, baby. I trust you. We all do.
I shook my head. And that's the problem, I said harshly. Everyone expects me to work this out. Everyone expects me to find a way in and execute a plan to bring Arziani down. I pressed my hand to Kiza's pregnant stomach, to our baby she was carrying. But more than that, I need this Arziani to be fucking killed. I need to cut off the head of the snake. Everything we have all been through starts with Arziani. The gulags, his contact with the Durovs, Levon Jakwa worked with Arziani, using Henri and Zal as his prototypes. Then we found out how he keeps so hidden, by using drugged killers as assassins. They take out anyone who is a threat. Kiza blinked, then blinked again when what I was saying hit home.
You believe he's coming for us? You believe that now we know about him, he'll send another Valentine?
Her words were not a question, because she knew what she said was exactly what I'd been thinking. An ache caved in my chest, and I leaned in to run my lips over hers. If he came for you, if someone took you away from me. I couldn't finish the sentence.
Stop,
Kiza said, moving back to press her finger over my lips. I took her hand in mine. My mind took me back to the gulag. I could still smell the dankness of the cells. I could still smell the richness of the blood spilled hourly in the ring. I could still feel the heavy veil of death that draped us all, waiting to strike. Waiting to deliver another soul to hell.
Luca, Lubov Moya, come back to me.
I gasped as I heard Kiza's soft voice cut through the memory. I tightened my grip on her hand. Once again, I looked down to her stomach, my teeth clenched together. Then I said, I have to find a way to take him down. I can't. I won't have our baby brought into this world, knowing that the male who condemned me, us all, to that life, is still breathing, still stealing children from homes, forcing them to be killers. A tear escaped Kiza's eye to fall to our clasped hands.
Luca, she whispered, this man scares me more than anything else in the world.
Dropping my forehead to rest against hers, I replied, that's another reason why he needs to be put out of our misery. I want our version of a normal life. I want this Bratva life with you, with my new brothers and our families. But as long as that prick lives, it can never happen. I paused. My hand, still on Kiza's stomach, felt a tiny kick. My eyes darted to my wife's stomach. Kiza laughed, a single, watery laugh. She covered my hand with her own, just as our baby kicked again. Leaning forward, Kiza pressed her lips to mine. When she pulled back, and I saw the love she had for me written on her stunning face, I knew I had to remedy the Arziani problem quickly. I had 2 months until our child came into this world. What that world would look like depended on me. A world free from any threat to our lives. That meant Arziani dead, his guards slaughtered, and the blood pit burned to ash. 4. 901. Stoically, I sat in my cell as I waited for my turn. I could hear the faint roar of the crowd and the stomping of feet coming from the pit. The first round had come and gone, as had the second and the third. The better matches were happening now. Then my match would follow. The main event. I rolled my neck from side to side as I spun my beloved kinjals in my hands. The handles were warm. My eyes stared straight ahead as I envisioned how this fight would go. I had no idea whom I was fighting. Master no longer informed me. He wanted me unprepared, going in blind to my opponent's weapon of choice and level of skill. He wanted a fucking show. A show he would never get from me. The sound of cell doors clattering against the walls came from down the hallway, and I knew it would be a wraith for me. My cell was at the end of the champion's quarter. It offered a bed, basin, and flush toilet. Master gave his champion the best accommodations. With this cell came more privacy. It was the only thing I really appreciated about this prison. I liked to be alone. I didn't want a connection with anyone else. Liking or even tolerating another fighter made you weak. I never even took a Mona when they were sent to me. I wouldn't fuck a female, even though I wanted to. They were forced into fucking as much as I was forced into killing. I didn't have any sympathy for them, but neither would I use them. I'd seen too many fighters brought down by becoming attached to a gifted female. They'd grown so attached that it had messed with their fighting skills. Females were a distraction from the most important thing in this place, staying alive. Suddenly, my cell door opened, and a guard walked in, gun in hand. He was dressed in a black uniform, the match night uniform. Master was nothing if not a showman for his investors. Up, the guard ordered. I obeyed and walked to where he stood. The guard looked up at me and said, "Master has ordered you to draw out the kill, to let your opponent get in a few strikes against you. He said you are to allow the Chinese investor's fighter to believe he is winning to ensure a rise in the stakes for your next match." Disgust at participating in such a pathetic show flooded through me. I wouldn't do it. Master knew it, but he ordered it just the same. He lived for the day when he mastered me completely. It wouldn't ever happen. "You understand?" The guard checked. Instead of snapping his neck to shut his whining mouth, I pushed past him and pounded down the hallway. As with every match, the sound of the spectators increased in volume, and, as always, I broke into a slow, steady run, my feet kicking up sand with every stride.
When I neared the end of the tunnel, I concentrated on the pit. I could see a huge man circling the sand, a spear in each fist. My lips curled up in excitement. This male actually looked like he could contend. We would see. Picking up speed, I burst through the mouth of the tunnel and charged at the male now standing at the center of the pit. Obviously expecting me to act quickly, the male struck out his spear. My right kingjaw immediately struck the wooden handle, splintering the weapon in two. The blurred calls from the crowd rose in volume as I plunged my blade straight through the heart of my opponent. As I forced my blade farther into his flesh, I watched his eyes widen and blood spill from his mouth. Leaning back, I lifted my foot and pushed against his chest, forcing his lifeless corpse off my blade. As he dropped to the floor, the crowd cheered. I towered over the dead male, breathing faster, but barely having even broken a sweat. Then the crowd grew silent. I turned to face Master's seat. The moment I looked up at him in the stands, I could see the rage simmering in his eyes. Of course, his always perfect public persona remained firmly in place. But I knew better. Inside, Master was erupting at my blatant disrespect of his orders. Then, as Master stood to address me, my eyes moved to the female sitting on the floor at his feet. I swallowed hard. It was the High Mona, the most beautiful female I had ever seen.
901,
Master's firm voice suddenly called out, snapping me from staring at the Mona dressed in blue, whose eyes were focused on the floor.
Another victory,
Master complimented. But I caught the venom in his words. I fought back a satisfied smirk. As Master was about to speak again, a male sitting a few seats to his left stated coldly,
You told me this match would be a good fight. Your animal just slaughtered mine in 10 seconds flat.
The male stared Master right in the eye. He continued,
You had seen my fighter, therefore you knew his skill level.
The male then looked to me and curled his lips.
This fighter far exceeded him in skill, which leads me to question your honor, Arziani.
At that, the crowd began talking in hushed whispers. Arziani's cheek twitched, betraying his rage at being questioned in his own house. No one questioned Arziani in this arena. So whoever this male was, he must have been important enough for Master not to order his immediate execution. Master's anger didn't show. Instead, a wide smile spread on his lips, and he assured,
I promise you that this was an even match. But I take your point. 901 is a highly exceptional fighter.
He paused, then his livid gaze fell on me.
Perhaps even the best fighter my empire boasts.
His head tipped to the side. The anger that lay in his eyes gradually faded. His hand dropped to his side. As my eyes followed the action, he ran his hands through the High Mona's dark hair. The Mona stiffened as he did so, and I had to work hard to restrain a sudden urge to rip his arm off. I felt my teeth grind together of their own accord. Before I showed my anger toward Master, I masked my expression. But as I refocused on him, I caught him watching me closely, very closely. My stomach sank as his lips hooked into a brief smirk. Then, as if nothing had transpired between us, he held out his hands to the crowd and announced,
To show that my pit isn't rigged, I shall stage a deathmatch tournament the likes of which you have never seen before. It will be the greatest of challenges, pitting together my empire's skilled and most ruthless killers. No rules, no restrictions. Any weapon of choice, but no guns, of course.
The crowd cheered Master's turn of phrase.
Any man can fight.
Master nodded in excitement and looked directly at me. He continued,
Then we shall truly see who is the best deathmatch warrior of all. We shall call on the champions from each of the gulags.
He turned to the male who had complained and added,
And my associates, that would be you, are free to enter whomever you wish.
The male whose fighter I had just slain didn't react, save to curtly nod his head.
Deal,
he replied, then flicked his wrist for his entourage to follow him out of the sands surrounding the pit. Master reached down and took hold of the Mona's arms. He pulled her to her feet, and without dismissing me as protocol demanded, he moved in for a kiss. The Mona submitted, as did they all. But as I watched Master's eyes open and stare at me without breaking from her mouth, scalding fire traveled through my already twitching muscles. When he pulled back, he dragged the Mona away from the stands, flicking his wrist my way, my signal to leave the pit. Turning on my heel, I jogged to the tunnel and ran all the way to my cell. Just as I was about to reach the door, Master walked through a side door to meet me. Alone. He stopped directly in front of me. He glared. I could see his intense hatred of me in every tense muscle under his suit. I stood fully upright, glaring right back at him, very obviously standing my ground. His jaw clenched.
You disobeyed a direct order,
he hissed coldly. I didn't flinch. I didn't react. I didn't do shit. He stepped closer.
You have fucked me over for the last time, 901. I have needed you these past few years, and you've known it. You wouldn't dare act this way if you didn't know. You are unrivaled here in the blood pit. That's beyond question. And now you have forced my hand with this fucking ultimate deathmatch.
Then he smiled, his head tipping to the side.
But now that I've calmed down, the more I think about it, the more it feels right.
He paused, then shrugged.
Think of all the gulag champions brought to Georgia fighting in my blood pit. Think of the money that will be made from them ripping one another apart.
His eyes flared, and he inched closer. His warm breath washed over me. Then he added,
Among the gulag champions, or my business associates' own fighters, there may be one that can defeat you.
His cheek twitched.
Imagine that. Imagine finding a diamond in the rough, one that is stronger than you, quicker than you, more skilled.
He stepped even closer.
One that is obedient, bends to my will, not one that is ungrateful and rebellious.
My anger boiled. Ungrateful? As if reading my mind, he held out his arms and said,
I've made you into what you are, a fighter no one can match. I've given you this life, a warrior for the modern age. In this place, to the spectators I bring in, you are a champion.
He paused, then added,
You are a god.
He dropped his arms, his face switching back to a livid expression.
I gave you it, and this is how you repay me.
I bit my tongue, forcing myself not to snarl that I bore no gratitude whatsoever to my master for condemning me to this hellish life, that I bore no gratitude for being drugged and forced to fight as a kid, that I bore no fucking gratitude to the male who had bestowed on me a life of solitude, where having feelings toward someone else made you weak. No gratitude, only red-hot hatred. So I welcomed this tournament. Maybe Master would bring me a fighter to finally end this life for me, save me from being Master's pet. But I wouldn't go easily, and that was his problem. My honor was all I had left, the only thing he could take away. I had fought and killed hundreds upon hundreds of opponents, so many I had lost count, but not once had any of them come close to ending me. Master stepped back at my silence and laughed.
You think you can beat them all, 901? Is that why you disobey my every order? Because you don't fear death? You really believe you're unbeatable?
My hands tightened on the handles of my king jaws. Master noticed, and another laugh burst from his lips.
You do! You really believe you can't be beaten, do you?
I lowered my eyes to focus on the ground. When Master didn't speak, I raised them. I detected something in his gaze. Inhaling, he folded his arms and declared,
Then you've just raised the stakes.
I fought a frown at what he meant, but Master didn't say anything else. Instead, he clicked his fingers at a nearby guard. My cell door was opened, and I was locked inside. I watched Master turn on his heel and leave the champion's quarter with a sadistic smile on his face. As much as I tried, I couldn't help but wonder what that smile had in store for me. My skin dripped with sweat as I returned from sparring in the training pit. As I reached my cell door, a loud roar came from the cell opposite my own. I glanced that way as a louder, more pained roar ricocheted off the dank stone walls. The roars were relentless, scream after scream, then hollow thuds. I took a step in that direction, then another, stopping outside the cell next door to where the screams were coming from. Suddenly, 667, a fellow champion, came to his barred door. I didn't turn his way. I never spoke to him, though he always tried to speak to me. As per Blood Pit rules, the top champions never fought one another. Although we were all Master's champions, I had gained more kills, was broader and taller than 667. The other one, 140, was no match for me either. They were all skilled and vicious in combat, but we all knew that if Master was ever to pit us against one another, I would slaughter them all. Master needed champions to pull in bigger numbers for championship matches. He had never had only one champion. At least he hadn't before. I heard rumors from the trainers as I sparred that Master's upcoming tournament wanted to find only one, the truest warrior of all, the champion of all champions. Suddenly, 140 charged his cell door, his sheer bulk almost taking down the heavy iron bars. 667 shook his head. Fuck, he hissed. This time, wanting to know why the warrior was acting strangely, I asked,
What happened?
667's eyebrows rose in surprise as I spoke. As 140 charged his cell once again, I growled,
"Answer me."
667 wrapped his hands around the bars and said, "The wraiths took his Mona." 140 roared out in pain and began tearing up his cell, lifting the mattress from the floor to throw it across the room. "Took her?" I questioned. 667's face dropped. Sighing, he replied, "Took her from his cell, shut his door, and slit her throat in front of him." My eyes dipped to inspect the dark stone ground before 140's cell. My eyes narrowed in concentration, struggling to focus in the half-light of the dim wall lamp. But then I saw it, freshly spilled blood. As 140's huge body slumped to the ground, I leaned against the cell door, a fire igniting within me.
"Master," I hissed.
667 nodded. "Why?" I questioned, never taking my eyes off 140. His blank and torn face now staring lifelessly at the blood splashed before him, just out of reach.
"He disobeyed," 667 informed.
"He killed the guard. The guard had tried to fuck his Mona while he trained. 140 broke the guard's neck when he returned before he could take her." 667's hands tightened on the bars. "When another wraith informed the Master, Master ordered his Mona to die." 667 paused, then said, "The guard that killed her made it slow and painful. He was seeking revenge for the slain guard." I watched 140. His skin was pale, and his hands were shaking. Worst of all was the look in his eyes. 140 was gone. He was broken. He wouldn't survive his next match. This male was already dead.
"She made him weak," I said, and turned my back to walk to my cell. "She was his Mona," 667 bit at me.
I stopped and looked back over my shoulder.
"She was his weakness. Master thrives off weakness. The fool offered his demise on a plate." "She was his heart," 667 said with even more bite. "Just as my Mona is mine."
Cracking my neck, my bones clicking, I slowly faced him. Holding out my king jaw toward where he stood, I said, "And like him," I pointed my blade to 140's broken, slumped form, "she too will be your downfall." I urged my feet to walk when 667 shouted, "I would rather die knowing my Mona's touch and comfort than to live a long life like you will, cold and alone in your cell, never knowing anything but blood and death and pain." This time I didn't stop. I kept walking until I was in my cell and a guard slammed the door shut. But even when the guard had walked away, I remained rooted to the spot, my king jaws still in my iron-tight grip. I would rather die knowing my Mona's touch and comfort than to live a long life like you will, cold and alone in your cell, never knowing anything but blood and death and pain. 667's words circled in my mind. They jabbed at my brain like the sharpest of knives. The coldness of my cell lashed at my cooling skin. Dropping the blades, I slumped to the mattress on the floor. As I stared forward at the dark stone walls, against my will, the face of Master's High Mona swam into view. I tried to chase this vision away,
but 667's words prevented me. Her dark hair and blue eyes, her perfect body, and how she looked in her dresses. Then, as if it were real life, I saw her standing before me, holding out her hand. But just as I went to reach for that hand, a wraith stepped behind her, knife in his hand. Before I could react, he struck at her throat. The Mona's pretty eyes widened with shock. She dropped to the ground in front of me, life fading quickly with the outflow of her blood. Shaking my head, I forced myself to lie back on my bed, still trying to push the image from my head. Because wanting her would make me weak. I wouldn't ever give my heart to another. Doing that only brought pain. I wouldn't be weak. I refused. I fell asleep, still picturing pooled blood at my feet. Pooled blood and 140's lifeless, vacant eyes.
5. 152. I woke with a groan. As my eyes opened, I tried to move my numb arms and legs, but I couldn't. As I tried again, I panicked. A cry left my lips as I glanced up to my arms and saw them secured to the bedpost with a rope. Focusing my attention on my feet, I saw that the same ropes were fastened around my ankles. Tears blurred my vision as I looked to the spot beside me in bed. It was empty. I stared at the bloodied linen, then at my stomach and thighs. I fought back sickness. My skin was peppered with bruises. Closing my eyes, I thought back to last night. Master had arrived and injected my arm. I pushed through the light fog the drug brought with it to remember what he had done. Master had been rough. Master had many sides to his personality, and last night saw him at his most wicked. From the moment he arrived, I remembered seeing his hard eyes. He walked to me, shedding his clothes. He grabbed my arm and bruised my lips as he crashed his mouth to mine. But this kiss wasn't gentle, nor was it softly petting as he sometimes gave me. No, this kiss was vicious and cruel, as was the rest of our night together. The tears from my eyes ran over my cheeks as I thought back to him tying me to the posts until I couldn't move. I remembered him placing himself between my thighs and slamming inside me, over and over with brutal thrusts. His hands had nipped and dug into my skin, but the drug made me crave him more, and Master gave it to me. Gave me his seed over and over, hard and harder until he made me bleed, until I couldn't take it anymore. He was punishing me. Punishing me for what? I didn't know. Then he left. Different from all our other nights together, he hadn't forced me into his arms so he could fall asleep with his cheek upon my breast. Instead, he had left me tied up to the bed, in pain, unclean. He'd left without so much as a backward glance. Fear held me captive as I thought of the previous Hymona. I wondered what she had done to deserve her death. I was terrified that I had done something similar. Though what? I had no idea. I shifted on the mattress, trying to find some relief from the pain, when the door to my room opened. My eyes darted to whoever was there. I prayed it wasn't Master, or worse, a guard to take me away. My heart beat fast, then strong relief surged through me when I saw my Judy enter. When she shut the door, her eyes searched the room for me. When she saw me on the bed, restrained, her dark eyes flared. Then I could see shock and sympathy in her stare. The Chiri rushed to where I lay, and her hands hovered over the ropes. "Miss," she whispered when she saw the blood and welts. Her head moved as she scanned the room. She ran into the washroom, then returned with a short, sharp blade. In silence, the Chiri began to cut my ties. I tried to hold back the cries of pain. But even the slightest movement of the rope at my wrists and ankles caused a searing blast of pain to rip through my body. "Sorry, miss," the Chiri said, as she tried to quickly and efficiently remove my restraints. One by one, the ropes fell away. As they did, my numb limbs fell lifelessly to the mattress. When all were removed, the Chiri began massaging my arms and legs, bringing the blood back to my muscles. I stifled a cry as they filled with what felt like an onslaught of needles. "It will help eventually, miss," the Chiri soothed. I nodded, telling her I understood. For several minutes, I let her massage my limbs until, though weakened, they returned to something near normal. When the Chiri withdrew her hands, she slid from the bed and crossed the room to fill the large sunken tub on the other side of the chamber. Unmoving, I watched her go about her work. I watched her long, ill-fitting gray dress hang loosely on her starved frame. I stared at her scar.
"I'll get you out of here."
I started as the echo of a voice spoke into my ear. Wanting to hear more, I shut my eyes and tried to recall the voice. The scar, I thought. The scar had made the voice speak? Thinking of the Chiri's scar, I prayed the voice would return.
"I promise. I won't stop until I find a way from this hell."
My heart raced as the voice returned, this time with greater clarity and strength. I stared at the male hovering over me. I lay in a corner of a dark cell, and I smiled.
"I know you will. I trust you. I believe in you."
My weak, shaking hand lifted to stroke the male's face, and he sucked in a deep breath. His bright blue eyes closed at my touch. My stomach rolled when a single tear fell from the corner of his eye.
"Don't cry," I murmured, chasing the tear away with the pat of my thumb. "I will wait. However long it takes, I will wait."
The scarred man opened his eyes. Gathering me in his arms, he held me close. My body was tired and I could barely move, but I felt safe in his arms.
"How long until they inject me again?"
I asked.
"Soon,"
he replied, and his huge body tensed.
"It's okay,"
I soothed.
"One day, I'll wake up and I'll be free. You will have freed me."
"I promise," he rasped. "You have my word. You're my blood. I'll never stop trying."
"Miss?"
A distant voice whispered. Something touched my arm.
"Miss?"
The voice spoke again. I fluttered my eyes open, the memory spiraling into a black void. I turned my head to the voice, but my vision was blurred. Gentle fingers wiped away the tears.
"Miss, are you okay?"
I swallowed back the lump in my throat. The vision had been so real. The care of the scarred man, a male who should have scared me, brought me the first sense of peace since I'd awoken in my gilded cage.
"Yes,"
I replied. The Chiri sat silently, awaiting my response. I lifted my head to my hand, breathing through the ache in my arm.
"My mind keeps showing me things."
I frowned.
"I'm never sure if they are real memories or illusions."
The Chiri nodded, then took hold of my hand.
"Miss, you must bathe."
Her eyes dropped to my body, specifically my thighs, which were covered in a mixture of my blood and Master's release. Forcing my legs to move, I slid them over the side of the mattress and held on to the Chiri to help me stand. As I swayed on my feet, I leaned against her and used her to walk to the tub. I groaned as I stepped into the hot water. The marks from the ropes burned. Gritting my teeth, I sat down and closed my eyes as the steam billowed around me, stinging my sores and soothing my aching muscles. The water's scent was delicious.
"What is in the water?"
I asked, and opened my eyes to see the Chiri dipping a cloth into the water before running it down my arms. I watched as the cloth wiped away the blood. The bruises remained. Nothing could wash those marks away.
"It's called lavender, miss. Master requires his high monas to be bathed in it. It's his favorite scent. I nodded, then rested my head back against the tub. The chiri washed my body, careful not to touch the bigger, darker bruises. I stared up at her as she worked and asked, "How did you become a chiri?" She stilled, then dropping her eyes, she said, "My father sold me to the wraiths. I was thin." My eyes widened. "Your father sold you?" The chiri nodded. The cloth stopped on my arm as she felt the heavy weight of my shocked stare. She sighed. "Starvation forces desperate people to do the most despicable things, miss. My mother had died. There were 6 of us. No food." She shrugged. "I understood why he did it." Her gaze lost focus as she continued, "Though I'm sure he had no idea where I would be sent." "I'm sorry," I whispered, hearing the edge of sadness in her plain words. The chiri flickered a watery smile my way. Only the left side of her mouth lifted, the right too deeply scarred to move. As I studied her tied back dark hair and her dress, my heart clenched. I asked, "And they raised you to be a chiri?" This time she withdrew her hand, and then, after a pause of several seconds, she shook her head. Eventually she met my eyes and replied, "I was brought in to be a Mona, just like you." I stared at her. Then, without intention, my gaze fell upon her scar. Clearly seeing my confusion, she added, "I made the mistake of resisting the training." She pointed at her disfigured cheek. "This was my punishment." "Why? How?" I asked, feeling a flood of sadness wash through my soul. The chiri's bottom lip trembled, but she pulled herself together enough to answer. "Acid. They threw acid over my face." She inhaled a shuddering breath. "I was punished for rejecting a guard's advances, so he ensured I would never look beautiful again." She paused, then added reluctantly, "It was at Master's instruction. He came to see how the new wave of Mona B were progressing. He saw my defiance and decided to make an example of me. He ordered me to stand forward, then instructed the guard I'd refuse to ruin my face." Ice crept up my spine. My eyes drifted to my rope-marked wrists, to my heavy bruising and thighs. "Yes," I thought. "Master is more than capable of ordering such a cruel act." "I'm so sorry," I said in a hushed voice. When I looked up, I saw something new in the chiri's eyes. A kinship. A common understanding of what it felt like to be on the receiving end of Master's cruelty. "What did you do?" the chiri asked, and commenced cleaning my body. I dropped my hand into the water, watching as it rippled around me. "I don't know," I confessed, repeating the action just for something to do. "He was so angry, his eyes so possessive of me. It was as if he was furious that he wanted me so much. It was as though I was being punished for how much he wanted to take me." I shook my head. "Which I do not understand. Master has made no secret of how much he wants me since I was elevated to this high Mona status." I looked to the chiri and asked, "So why now does he seem to resent it?" "I don't know," she admitted. I could see the confusion I was feeling showcased on her face. Moving to the head of the tub, the chiri made quick work of washing my hair. Just as she was rinsing out the soap, I asked, "Do you have a name?" My eyebrows pulled down and I asked, "Do I have a name? I can't remember." The chiri dropped down to crouch by my side. She studied me, seeming to search my face for something. Eventually, her shoulders slumped and she said, "Yes, miss. I once had a name, though I haven't been called it for many years." She took in a breath and continued, "You will too. We all have names,
all who are enslaved in this place. We were all someone once, though Master makes quick work of making us forget. A name, I whispered. I tried to rack my brain for what I was called, but it was to no avail. The only name I had, the only identity my brain could find, was 152. I was 152. I had only ever been 152. I don't remember, I said sadly. The Chiri went to move, but I reached out and took hold of her arm despite the protests of my aching muscles. Wait, I begged. The Chiri froze. Do you remember your name? Do you have a name? The Chiri's face paled, and then I knew. She did. She remembered her name. I sat up as quickly as I could manage and pushed. What is it? Please tell me. The Chiri shook her head, biting her bottom lip as her eyes glossed over. Her head dipped forward and she said, I could be killed for telling you, miss. It is forbidden by Master for any of us who remember to speak of it. Her arm began trembling beneath my touch, and she said, I know what he is capable of, and although I hate this life, here in this prison, I still want to live. I live for the day we will be free. I remember the outside world. Not all of it, but enough. She closed her eyes and inhaled. I remember the sun and the fresh air. I won't lose hope that we'll get that again. Deflated, I sank back into the water. I understand, I said soothingly, and I meant it. I would never put her in danger. I stayed in the bath for a few more minutes, and then the Chiri helped me out. As she did every day, she dried my hair and then led me to the seat in the side room, fixing my hair and beautifying my face. I watched her as she picked out a bright red dress. Only this dress was different from the others. It was made of a fabric so sheer that you could clearly see what was underneath. As the Chiri took my hand for me to stand and then began to wrap me in the dress, securing it at my shoulders, I frowned. Reading my confusion, she said, Master ordered me to dress you for seduction. I'm to take you to him now. I swallowed in trepidation and replied, Okay. As the Chiri walked toward the door, she suddenly turned and stopped dead. I wondered what was wrong. Dropping her chin to touch her chest, she whispered, Maya. I opened my mouth to speak, to ask her what she had said, when she met my eyes with her own and repeated, My name is Maya. I felt warmth swell in my heart. With the revelation of her name, the Chiri before me transformed into a young girl. A young girl with a name. She was no longer a plague. She was a person. Unable to keep from smiling, I let the happiness of her confidence in me show. Maya's cheeks blushed at this gesture. It's beautiful, I said. Maya's cheeks reddened even more. Stepping closer to her, I reached for her hand and said, Thank you for telling me. I swear, I will never tell another soul. Thank you, she replied. Then, checking over her shoulder, turned to me and said, I don't know your name, miss, but I heard Master talking about you. He said you were 21 years old. I know that isn't much information, but it's something. You have an age. That's more than most in this place have. My pulse sprinted, rushing the blood through my ears. 21, I said quietly. I briefly closed my eyes and repeated with increasing confidence. 21. 21? Yes, miss, Maya said in support. I had to hold back from taking her in my arms. If I were caught embracing a Chiri, it would be punishment for us both. Thank you, I hushed out. Maya bowed her head, then pointed to the door. We must go, miss.
Master will not be happy if we are late.
I glanced around at my sheer dress and felt my cheeks heat with embarrassment. The dress was entirely see-through. You could see every part of my naked body underneath. My breasts, but shockingly, my most private area was clearly visible.
All mona be here in the pit wear this garment, miss. It is only the high mona that is covered, to show she is master's and master's alone.
I nodded in relief, only for fear to spike in its wake.
Does this mean I am no longer high mona? Have I been relegated to being a mona once again?
Pure terror then shot to my heart when I confessed.
I don't want to be drugged again. I don't want to forget who I am again.
Sympathy flooded Maya's gaze.
I do not know, miss. I know nothing more than instructed.
Before I could respond, there was a loud bang on the door.
Master will be waiting.
We both jumped as a guard shouted. Maya's eyes grew large and she said,
We must hurry.
Steeling my nerves, I followed her out the door, ducking my head when the guard by the door stared lustfully at my state of undress. Maya led me swiftly through a maze of hallways, all dark stone lit only by dim lights, until we arrived at a forked section. Three hallways led to different areas of the pit. Maya headed down the hallway farthest to our left, and I dutifully followed. We had walked only a few steps when the hallway changed from stone to sterile white walls, with many lights that almost blinded me. I tried to understand what I was seeing, but I couldn't. When we arrived at a silver door, Maya opened it and I stepped through. A large room lay before me. Several cages were lined along the walls. Then my heart sank when I saw what was inside. Four young boys, appearing to be between 6 and 18 years of age, sat in cages. Three were rocking back and forth, sweating and restless. One was staring straight forward, like he was alive but no longer aware of the world around him. I tried to look for Maya for explanation, but she had already crossed the room to another door. I rushed to catch up. As I arrived at the door, Maya had opened it to reveal another room. This one was smaller. A narrow bed lay in the center. Along one of the walls were collars of all shapes and sizes. Thick metal collars. I closed my eyes when an image of the scarred male came to my mind. In my vision, he was wearing a collar. It was wrapped tightly around his neck. Then the vision deepened, and in my mind's eye I heard a hiss spring from the collar, and it tightened around the scarred male's neck. His muscled neck corded and his blue eyes flared until the blue was eradicated by black. Then the scarred male was no longer friendly. He was no longer safe. He was dangerous, becoming the most brutal of killers.
Miss?
Maya's soft voice brought me from my thoughts, and she pointed to the bed.
You must sit on here and wait for Mister.
I stared at the narrow bed, at its restraints hanging to the sides, and I feared the worst, but I did as instructed. I had just climbed onto the bed when the door opened again, and a male in a white coat walked through. He saw me but didn't even flinch at my state of undress. Instead, he walked to the wall housing the collars and took the smallest one from its rack. I never moved my eyes from him as he silently worked. My hands were linked on my lap so the male couldn't see me shake. I was so focused on the mental image of the male with the collar that I neither saw nor heard Master enter the room. I knew he had materialized only when I felt a finger drift over my arm and brush over the rope burn on my wrist. I sucked in a sharp breath at the raw tenderness, then my eyes collided with Master's. I quickly bowed my head and saw his feet step as close as they could to the bed. His hand lifted and I braced for a strike. Unexpectedly, it ran softly down my face. I scrunched up my face in confusion. I had expected the wicked Master from last night, but before me was the gentle and loving male from days ago.
Such a beautiful petal,
he whispered tenderly and placed his finger under my chin to raise my head. I did as instructed and lifted my face to look at his. Master's gaze roved down to study my body,
his eyes twitching in annoyance when he took in the bruises on my arm. He shook his head, and, leaning forward, ran his lips over my forehead.
I had no choice. I had to take you that way.
He reared back and said,
You're so beautiful. Too beautiful. I can hardly bear what I'm about to do. What I have to do to make sure my empire stays strong.
Pure terror took hold of my senses at his words, and the regretful, sad tone of his voice. Lifting his hand, he cupped my cheeks and stared into my eyes. As always, I could see the crazed possession staring back. He shook his head and licked his lips.
My very own Helen of Troy.
He paused after those words, but I didn't understand what he meant or who he was referring to.
Your beauty is too coveted, but also extremely useful.
I inhaled a ragged breath, and he added,
And now I must whore you out to an animal.
This time my heart kicked into a heady sprint.
Whore me out to an animal?
My mind raced, trying to piece together what was to happen. Suddenly, Master pushed me back onto the bed and shackled my wrists and feet. I didn't fight back. Every part of me trembled as Master stayed beside me, stroking his hand along my cheek. His blazing, crazed eyes almost undressing me. The male in the white coat moved beside me and took hold of my hand in a shackle. He moved up the cuff until my wrist was bare. It took me a moment to see what he had in his hand. The collar. I flinched, imagining it going around my neck. But when I looked closer, I saw that it was too small. It was a bracelet. Then my short-lived sense of relief faded fast when I spotted the inside of the bracelet. It contained small needles, clear pellets of liquid behind each one. The male lifted my wrist. Suddenly, he attached the bracelet to my skin and clasped it shut. A scream escaped my throat when the needles pierced my skin, sending a searing pain up my arm.
Shh, Petal,
Master soothed. As I tried to breathe through the torment. His palm pressed against my forehead, and he moved in to nibble my lips with his teeth, then cover them with his own. I whimpered at the unwanted affection, but Master didn't seem to care. When he reared back, he said,
I have to do this. This task you must undertake is bigger than us both.
He gestured around the room.
All of this. Our empire rests on the shoulders of one man.
I tried to understand what he was saying, but the pain was too much.
He has no weaknesses, and as much as it incenses me, I need him. He will win my tournament for me. But first, I need to break him. I must have him fully under my instruction. I need him to fully bend to my will.
He talked to me like I knew what he meant.
My investors expect a show. They expect it to be a close match, not a call. For that, I need him to obey.
Master's finger drifted down my chest and stopped at my breast. His fingertips circled my nipple and his nostrils flared.
In all of the years under my command, he has given me no way to fully overpower him.
He let that sentence hang in the air, until he looked at me again and said,
Until you. Until I saw him stare at you. My champion. My cold, unfeeling killer. Affected by this face.
He nuzzled his cheek against mine and said,
He wants you.
He stilled. In a flash, the cruel soul from last night possessed his being. Snapping his head up, lips curling, he hissed.
My high Mona! My pretty delicate Petal! I don't want to let you go, but it will serve a higher purpose.
His cheeks flushed with excitement.
Then I can own you completely. When my empire is secure, I can have you all day and all night. I will possess you in every possible way.
My blood turned cold at his words. Feeling a wetness on my wrist, I glanced over and saw blood trickling downward. Master saw it too and clicked his finger at Maya, who was hovering like a shadow in the corner.
Clean it, Jiri,
he snarled. Maya rushed to the water and a wet cloth, immediately cleaning my wrist. I tried to meet her eyes, but she kept her head down. When my wrist was clean, I stared at the silver bracelet and immediately knew it was the drugs. Instead of a single injection, this would give me regular, automatic doses. The male in the white coat quickly moved around the table, unshackling me from the bed. Master helped me stand,